And there's no issues with that. It's just that a lot of those languages were not designed with a compiler in mind. And all readers, to be honest, programmers. So you've got to hand write and you've got to handcraft a lot of those things.
In your previous example, we took the end of line out between the statements and said that it was a PLF error.
Thanks very much, Anthony.
Wasn't that actually a bizarre requirement for an end of statement?
No, there is no actual requirement, no. So that's okay. So you might want to have something like you probably do, but Antler should be good enough to. Yeah, it should be good enough. No, not with the interpreter. I do have a. Yeah. So there is a slightly nicer way of doing that, but I can't think of it right at the moment. This is where the cookbook would be really nice. So obviously that error there is not particularly useful, but from the command line, that gets parsed into a nice string for you. But this is the nice thing with the GUI toolkit. You can sit there and play with the interpreter and change things. That's quite possible. Yeah, but I kind of want the new line there, I think. Yeah, yep, okay, so I think that works. No, it should be fine. Because it's either new line or error. You mean go back and do the thing that's breaking this way? Errors reported in console. It works break. Excellent. The EOF handling is not quite good. So generally what you have is your outermost rule ending with an EOF. That's the most typical thing. But sometimes you don't want that. Like if you just want to parse little bits and pieces in a file and you don't, if there's fluff after it that's not matching, you don't want to die. Was that sort of solved? So, all right, yep.
So maybe you're going to get this later on, but you mentioned an AST earlier in the context of AST error codes.
Yep.
Can you talk about AST at all?
Yep. Next example.
Hidden channel, is that just like a built-in channel?
So channels have numbers. The parser has an API where it can say listen to channel blah. By default, it listens to channel 1, I think. And all hidden is, I think, is 99. So it's just a number. So the parser is very flexible with what channels it'll listen to and stuff. And I have seen grammars where some of the actions will actually say, right, now that I've parsed this, I want the parser to listen to this other channel on this other thing, and you can flit around and do other things. But hidden itself is just a number.
Does that mean you just say channel equals 12?
Yep. Dookie dookie.
Can you give the channels human readable names in an
easement? Yes, you probably could. You can probably do things like so that'll be a header section that gets to the area around the imports in the Java. And then how do you do a constant in Java? So it's just final, not const?
Final is
const.
Just
final.
Can you define it as well?
And that should work. Of course it won't. But you can very much do that sort of thing because anything that's in that brackets is just code. So the only thing that Antler does there is that dollar channel. It will change that dollar channel to be whatever dollar channel is in the target language. So in things like Java, where you've got objects, channel will be an attribute of an object. In C, where you don't have objects, it'll be a variable. So that's the only thing it'll do there. How do you mean what you want it to look like? Yes. So this is a definite issue at the moment. So there's no language agnostic stuff for the action. Python's great for this because it essentially accepts everyone's code. But so that's an issue. And what you want to do is you want your grammar to parse your thing to be as free of action items as possible. So ideally, you want to have the channel equals white space, and you want that to be the only thing, the only language specific stuff. You'll have that one grammar to parse it, and then you'll have so you'll have that one language to parse it. You'll turn that into an AST, greatly shrink your input range, and then you'll have your problem-specific things that take your trees and do target language things to it. So you do want to try and separate out those concerns, but you're not forced to. So if it's a quick and hacky dirty job, you put all of your problem-solving code right in the grammar file and generate straight to your output. If it's a larger thing, you can split things out and make things nicer like that. So there's a project called Yggdrasil. Don't know how to pronounce it. It's got too many G's and D's in it. And that's by an Antler guy. And essentially what that is it's a target language agnostic action code. And it's very interesting. But Terence has not yet sort of made up his mind about whether he likes that enough to go with it or not. The one thing here is that the interpreter needs to know which one of these rules is a whitespace rule. And I have a funny feeling that it actually looks for the string called hidden. Yep. So in this particular example, yeah, you actually need the string hidden there. But that's just the GUI stuff. It's not the actual code. So that was the comp file. No, I don't want to save changes. So this is our... Sure. It can be, but generally speaking, it's the Alexa, and that can blow out. And the only target language that has any problems with this is Java, because it has some 64K limit or something on Java files. So main.java, that's a little that's further on, but that's a handwritten file. So you've got the Lexer and you've got the parser there. These things can get much larger. And although the code that's output is a recursive descent parser, the intermediate stages where it builds up DFAs to figure out what characters it should be looking for, what characters it should be looking out for, so bad characters, good characters, all of that code can get rather large in certain corner cases. There are ways to get around that. But at the end of the day, most of the time, it can come down to a couple of little decisions in your Alexa. Generally, it's pretty good, though. So does that make things, is that making people a little bit happier with, so if I go, if I generate that, so if I do, that. So that's the C minus example. So that's not quite 1,000 lines for the parser. But you can see that the Lexer is actually just as tricky when it comes to the output code. And oftentimes it's the actual Lexer that gets tricked up in size problems. So there's a couple of switches to pass. So if it has trouble compiling, there's a couple of switches that you can pass where it can do DFA stuff. Differently, so it won't do them inline, it'll put the DFA data in a separate file. But I myself have not come across this, and all the examples I've seen of that, it's because there was a blow up in the language itself that could be trivially fixed just by doing a little bit of refactoring. So, what we've got there is a tree, and it contains all the semantics of that little snippet of language there. But it's kind of verbose. So, what you want to do is have a condensed form of that tree that still has all the information, but is much smaller. And what we've got there is called the parse tree, so that's got all the tokens in a tree format. What we want to generate is an AST, so an abstract syntax tree. So it's like the parse tree, but with all the fluff removed. So when I speak fluff, I mean semicolons, because if the statement's finished, we know that the statement's finished because that's the leaf node in our tree. Things like the equals, if we're the child of an assigned statement, we know that where there's going to be an equal somewhere there. We don't actually care about the equals. So, this is the job of the AST. So, we've got a couple of funky things here. So, mostly, it's exactly the same as the C-minus tree, C-minus input. Exactly the same Lexer rules. Mostly, it's the same rules for expressions and stuff, but there's a couple of funky characters in there. Oh, I'll get rid of that. Oopsies, did I just do something bad? Bloody gooeys. So, we have a grammar called C-AST. We have an option here, we say the output is an AST. So normally, your output doesn't, you don't really have an output, it's just whatever action code you put in there. This is another way of defining tokens. These are tokens that don't necessarily refer to any input in the input stream. So these are tokens that we've made up because they have some semantic notion. So for example, the block. In our...
can I do that? No.
So in our input here, for example, we have blocks of code which are delineated by open brackets and closed brackets. That's a block is a concept, but an open curly bracket is not a block and a closed curly bracket is not a block. So we've made this new token called a block. And it conveys an idea, which is a statement block, but it's not directly tied to any particular input token. So what we do is we add rules for making tree nodes from our statements. There are three ways of doing this. The first is do nothing, and a node will get copied across verbatim. So this is what will happen with all of our token nodes here. So an ID will get taken straight across, an int will get taken straight across. The white space obviously won't get taken across. And that makes sense because the IDs and the numbers in the code, they're carrying semantic information. You can't rip them out and still have the same program. There are also operators. Now, there's two operators in use here in these two lines. There's the caret operator. And essentially what you're doing here is you're teasing out the root of a tree. So if you've got one... Pick the dark color. So you've got 1 plus 2, which is what that add expression rule will match. What you're basically saying is you're pinching up the A with the caret, and so the tree that will get made is 1 plus a 2. And so when you're looking at the tree from the top down, you see that it's an add tree or an add expression. So that's that caret rule there. And those caret rules will get used mostly in mathematical and Boolean logic stuff.
How does that work with the repeats around more times? So say if you have 3.
Yeah, so it works nicely for associative maths, but if you want to do power maths, like the sort of convention that you take for powers, you can swap that around later on. It's a good cookbook solution, and it's there on the wiki already. Another operator here we see is the expression operator, which basically says, for the previous token, delete it. I don't want to see it in the AST. So if we've got 1 plus 2 times 3 is our input stream. What we want to see, I've got to get this right, otherwise that'll be embarrassing. We want to see 1 plus 2. So as we're going down, the multiplication binds most tightly. Then we've got the brackets. That's fine. So what we'll actually have is probably have an expression mode, which will be a times, which will be a 2 and 3. So we care that that's telling us to bind things. We don't actually care where the brackets are. And the third and most powerful type is actually the rewriting rules, which are these. Yep.
Is there a way to
So not in a Bison style where you say these are all your operators and in this certain order they've got their associativity. You can do the associativity fairly easily with the rewriting rules. So for example, if you've got a bool expression, that will be an expression or another expression. That'll be an AND. And your AND expression will be true or false and true or false. And what you're doing there is, because of the way that you're laying out the rules, it'll look at a Boolean expression and it'll see, oh, it's an OR expression. So it'll keep parsing things till it sees an OR, and it'll treat the outermost ones first, and then it'll go in and look at the ANDs. So that's a way of doing some of the proper convention for that sort of stuff. But you can do... So it's very similar to the mathematical stuff. You can easily do leftmost or rightmost associativity. I'll just clear that.
So this arrow is a rewrite?
That arrow there is a rewrite. And basically what it's saying is rewrite that previous rule into this in the AST rule. So the 4 there becomes our root node. You'll note that in the output we don't have the brackets. So if we go back to the atom rule, one of those is open bracket expression close bracket. One way of rewriting that AST nicely is to put exclamation marks next to the brackets. Another way is just to rewrite that as expression and not putting the parenthesis nodes in there. They'll just get dropped in the rewrite. So those two are equivalent there, and it's just kind of depends which one's neater and cleaner. What we've got here is, yeah, it's probably easier if I show you the block one first. So what we're doing with the block one, where we've seen the open parentheses, we've seen some variables, some statements, and then the closed declaration. And the semantic information there is it's a block of code. So we make a block tree which has some variable children and some statement children. And that's a reasonably simple example of a rewrite. And you'll note that we're dropping the curly brackets by not having them in the rewrite expression. The for loop is a little bit more insane. So, for open bracket, assignment, semicolon, yada, yada, yada. So, there's a lot of fluff in the input that we don't care about in the output. So once we've seen that we've got the 3 expressions, we don't actually care that we've got the separators or not, so we just don't write those. We don't write the for, we don't write the brackets, we don't write the semicolons. The issue here, though, is that we've got 2 statements that are the same sort. So we've got those 2 assignment statements. And if I was just to say for assignment state, so if I was in the output just to have, just to go for assign stat, the issue there is we don't know which one of the assign stats we're referring to. So we use a thing called labeling, and that's where we've gone init equals assign stat, inc equals expression, and stop equals assign stat. So that means when we rewrite it, we can refer to $init and $stop, and the parser will know which one of those we're talking about.
Is there any reason why you've got the omitting a literal for rather than the
type? No, not at all. So, of course, I'll change this back when it breaks something. Oh, sorry. Do that and do that. Should be equivalent. So what we've done here is we've basically given Antler some hints about what crap we don't need. And so the labeling stuff you see very often in mathematical stuff, where you've got so you've got like expression plus expression. And you can rewrite that as a plus tree with expression and expression. Except that when you're talking about expression, which expression are you talking about? So very commonly, you'll see A equals expression, B equals expression, and then $A, $B. So it's just a way of getting around the aliasing problem. So ASTs, for whatever reason, don't work with the interpreter, but they do work with the debugger. So let's see if I can drive this thing. So if I'll use that input file. Now you've got to be careful here that you give it the right starting function. Like you can actually tell it to parse the entire file as a variable type and you get all these errors and it's what the fuck? Yeah, so you've got to be a little bit careful there. But it doesn't pick the outermost rule all the time for some reason. I don't know. Now the debugging is quite handy. What you can do is generate a parser with debugging code, compile it into your program normally, and debug the parser part of your program remotely with AntlerWorks. So if you compile your if you generate your parser in debug mode, it'll open up, it'll have a little daemon, like a GDB daemon, and there's a particular protocol that AntlerWorks and Antler debugging grammars will talk, and you can actually debug these things remotely. So the really nice thing is that that lets us debug different grammars. So for example, I could remotely debug a Python grammar, a Python implementation with the AntlerWorks debugger. And that might actually work if I finish it this week. So, but essentially it's a set of states that you're going along. And so if I do... Where the heck is it? Right. So, we can see the input on the left. The different colours mean different things. Syntax highlight, I don't know. But as you're going along, you can see that some of them become grayed. So it's seen int, it's done a look ahead, it's seen the semicolon, it knows that the semicolon's stopping whatever, and it's coming back and it's actually trying to match stuff. So what we've got here is the parse tree. So it's exactly the same as with the interpreter. If I zip to the end, it's parsed the whole thing. And if I show you the parse tree, it's exactly the same as we saw the other time. Whole lot of crap. But if I show you the AST, it should be really tiny. And if I get rid of some of these windows. Oh dear, I got rid of the wrong window there. Oh dear. There it is. So that is the parse tree of our program. And it's much smaller. And it contains just enough information to convey the meaning of the input program and no fluff. So we've got, I think here it might actually work. Yes, excellent. So we've got a declaration of a character named C. There's no semicolon, there's no white spot, there's no guff. We've got a second declaration with an integer and an x. We've got a function, foo, with parameters, y and d. We've got the blocks. So we've got the for loop block there. We've got the assign statements. And hopefully from this you can see that it wouldn't take much to go from your AST to making a little interpreter that walks the AST. If you add a little stack, so actually storing values of variables, that you can make a quick and cheap interpreter just from the AST. And that's something that I've done a couple of times. In Java, it kind of sucks. In Python, it's kind of nice.
So in this case, if you want to use an AST, you'd actually have to reparse the AST yourself as opposed to having an action statement related to the AST.
You can have actions as part of the AST, but that's when they're parsed. So what I tend to do is...
Doesn't that defeat the purpose of the AST?
In some respects, yes. So what Antler produces is an AST, and all of these things are of type node. So they're all of some class node. To make an interpreter useful, you change the tree adapter. The tree adapter is the code that Ant will call when it's making these nodes, and you switch on the type of token. So you actually have a block token. A block node and an assigned node. And this is in your Java source. So you can get to a point where Antler is making a different type of node per different type of token. And each of these will have a call function. That's just the name I use. You can obviously call it anything. And it will, commonly it will take a stack. And that stack will contain all of your variables and stuff. And the reason that you do that is that if you've got a for loop, for example, and you want to call it multiple times, it's much easier doing it that way than having your actions in your code. So I believe it's important to separate out your runtime stuff from your codes, from your parsing stuff. And that works really, really well, because your AST description, it has no idea how the parsing is going along. These things just get sprung into existence as far as it's concerned. And like your assign statement, for example, is generally as simple as push this, isn't it? Sorry, the whole Java thing.
Do I write an interpreter to add things to the AST, or how do I associate the resulting nodes?
So there's the Antler code, so there's a little bit of boilerplate code where you connect the Lexa, the grammar, and the AST parser up together. One of those things is the tree adapter function, and you would give it your own tree adapter. The default tree adapter will make a generic node that has children. You would have a one which has, so in Python, I suppose, has Java got reflexivity stuff? So you have classes that have the same names as the tokens in the grammar file, and you just go, this is a for token. So I'll go hunting around in my Java namespace for node, and you have that, and that can be, you know, two or three lines long, and then you have a simple class for each of the different types of token, and they have a two or three line call statement. So for assign, you'd push like this name and this dot value onto your stack, and that can be as hard as it needs to be. And you've completely separated your parsing from your runtime stuff. So you can do all of that in the grammar file, but I just think that gets horrendous and complicated, and I much prefer doing it that way.
Separate AST and then separating
that from the evaluation, but they're two big separate classes. Yep. Complicated doing hands. Yep. But if it's a long time interpreter thing where you're declaring functions and stuff, you've got to have that sort of thing.
Right.
So I certainly think that there's room for doing things where, holy crap, where's the syntax diagram for? So I certainly think that there's room for doing stuff like, and attaching that to the conditional inside the grammar file. I think there's a little bit of scope for improvement there. Sorry? Ah, yeah, like that's completely bogus and won't work, but there's room for improvement in that area. So, you've gone all the way from your configuration file up to a little mini language, you've made an AST. With a little bit of work, you can actually turn that into an interpreter easily enough. You can do some rewriting stuff where you parse for, you read in the entire thing, you just look at your variables, and you might want to work out the cyclic complexity of your code or any number of things. The other things that you can do, is template stuff. So this is parser C minus, but it outputs templates instead of AST. So you can see there that output equals template. It makes use of scopes, which is a little bit of an Antler shim to help you parse languages that have some sort of lexical or dynamic scope. So you don't have to be too worried about most of that stuff, but essentially what it's doing is when it parses a declaration, it looks very similar to the tree rewriting rules. But what's that actually doing there is that there's a template called program that takes two parameters called globals and functions, and we actually pass the scope globals and the scope functions, which we've declared further back up. So what we're doing here is parsing the language, getting just enough semantic information, and then using a template to translate the language. So if we go to assign, for example, so we have the assign statement here, we parse it, and then we output the assign template, and the assign template takes left-hand side, right-hand side. And equals does something fairly similar, and less than. And that can be, so here we're parsing, we're not going via an intermediate AST. Occasionally the AST can be easier or prettier. It all depends on how far advanced your project is. So, how do I compile stuff again? yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
CC equals JavaScript.
Right. So, first of all, I need to generate didn't like that. It turns grammar. Alright, that's... Oh, what am I doing? Okay, so we now got the C minus template lexa and parser. So class path. It works. C minus template dot. All right. So now it's the same thing, except Yeah, where's my class? Java, C-minus template, parser.java, main.java. There! Good God. Yeah, I want to try and avoid that if I can. Set template. Link. That should have been picked up. Oh, that's annoying. That worked yesterday. Oh, I'm sure it would have been fine in the other room. That's the only problem.
I think your main job is referring to C minus plus or super minus template.
Yeah. But, I'm not sure actually. So if I go to a clean directory where I actually stole this one from. Do that. Oh, no. That's right. Right. So I've obviously screwed something up by copying this example into the other directory and overwriting some things. So if I pass that, that's the input file, essentially the same thing that we've been mucking around with. If we have a look at the STDE files, which are the string template grammar files, we have three of them, a bytecode, a Java, and a Python. So this program will let us output that input in either Java bytecode, Java code, or Python code. So, believe if I do, excellent. So what that all that one's doing there is it's just putting a wrapper around that function there. So it's taking that C kind of thing and putting it into a class. So if I do the Python, it's essentially all it's doing is removing semicolons, to be honest. So it's removing the semicolons, it's removing the character, the character types, the definition of the types in parameters and stuff like that, and doing the whole white space thing nicely. And if I replace that with the bytecode, so that is apparently the Java assembler, at least, for the same amount of code. And I've run that through in my head, and it kind of looks like it would work. But basically, it's using that, So it's parsing that one input via this grammar file and then outputting to the template. And all of the magic of the templating, of the outputting in the different forms is done in the template. So you don't have to touch your grammar at all if you want to output a new language, assuming you've got enough semantic information in your AST or whatever intermediate form is. And this is exactly the same technique that Antler uses itself to generate different languages. So it'll look at your grammar file, read it, figure out what's going on, and then it will output to templates. And there's a C template and Java template and a Python template, and it will generate that code for you. So if we have a look at these templates. So, you know, most, you know, all of these are trivial. So you've got your statement list. So you open up a block, you put your statements, and then you close the block. And string template does really nice stuff with whitespace handling, so it'll do proper indenting for you without you even trying. Your assign statement, left-hand side equals right-hand side, semicolon. So Python will be exactly the same as that, except no semicolon. And the bytecode one will be a little bit more complicated because each thing equates to a few different things. So assign is work out what the right-hand side is, push that onto the stack, and then store whatever's on top of the stack. But the nice thing there is the separation of concerns from the different output languages. So that's the last example I had. Are there any questions? So I did, so good question. So char xf. Okay. So, codedan templates, Python. So I did the AST output for Python, and I did that in an afternoon. The Python one itself was done by Benjamin, fucking weird German. But most, so it all depends, of course. But if you're doing something for which a template of a similar language already exists, it can be trivial. If you're doing it for something that's completely wacko, like PHP, you're in for some time. So a lot of the stuff that happens these days is you'll copy. It used to be the case that people would copy the Java template and tweak things from there. It's now the case that they copy the Python template and add things. Because most of the time, if you take the Java template, you're just removing a lot of static int, final, blah, 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 crap. But the Python one doesn't come with any of that crap. If you found something that's quite similar, so those are all the supported languages there. So the C, the C#, Java, Objective-C, Python, Ruby, and C++. So if your language is similar to that, it can be the job of like half a day or so.
You mentioned something called Objective-C or something?
What? So it's one of those two spellings. Yeah. Unfortunately, they're comments in the slides. But essentially, that's Antler. So Yggdrasil is essentially Antler with code target language agnostic actions. But the thing is that often that's not what you want. Like if it's a hacky thing, you really want to be able to use the Python data structures, and you don't care about that sort of thing. Right. So one more. Yep.
Is there any work being done on taking Lexicon? Learning that to
what? No. Oh, a grammar? Like, no. It's a fundamentally different grammar. It's all backwards. So the typical thing that you have is, So a typical thing you have is A equals A, B star C, A. It's a very typical thing to have in Yak, and that won't work in Antlop because A will, all these things get turned into functions. So A will call A, and then B, and then A again, and A will call A, and so that. That is exactly the reason that you never want to have token rules that don't consume stuff. So there is a converter for going from Yak, Bison, grammars to Antler stuff. It's not perfect, but essentially it, you go from doing that to A op A stuff. What am I talking about?
In something you need to convert into like a cursive value.
Yep. But it's not always trivial. But again, this is a great cookbook that somebody's working on.